This is The Guardian.
Today. Oh no, it isn't. Oh yes, it is. The Christmas panto season is crucial for the theatre industry. But is it about to be ruined for a second year in a row?
Socks! Give me socks. And some Africa links, thank you. I've not even got the bloody costume on yet.
Nine Christmas crackers.
When we got to the Core Theatre in Corby, in Northamptonshire last week, Britain had not yet been told to once again work from home or to strictly limit social activity. In the theatre, there was anticipation. A hive of activity. A cast of drag queens and a king in the basement rehearsing for the opening night of their biggest show of the year, the Christmas pantomime Sleeping Beauty.
Seven Cathy toys,
six rubber chickens.
Yeah, at the moment we've actually two shows running simultaneously, two different sets of cast and crew kind of buzzing off each other and having fun.
That's Joe Flavin, the Core's artistic director.
And a bra that could only fit three.
And we'll stop there so that you can then prime the audience.
As anxious as this year now feels, last year, he said, was far worse.
You know, you go back a year ago and there was literally, you know, one staff member wandering around an empty building, an empty theatre with nobody around, just flushing the taps and, you know, flushing the toilets to make sure that, you know, everything was kept safe. It was really, really sad. A really quiet, empty space that, you know, before that was filled with really happy people.
It was a similar story for theatres across the country, and the knock-on effects were huge. Theatres play a crucial role in local communities, and they're an essential foundation stone of the creative industries.
It brings people together in towns. It tackles social issues. You know, you might not engage with theatres, but they're still doing a massive job in your community. But also it props up the film and TV industry. So take theatre out of the mix and you won't have Netflix because those actors didn't learn how to act in their youth theatre and they didn't then go on to make that lovely show and go on to the next thing. So, you know, it's all part of a wider ecology. I mean, theatre, it might not be for everybody, but it massively is the spine, really, of the arts in the UK.
And a bra that was made to hold three.
Last year, 189 theatres had to cancel or postpone their Christmas performances. A massive blow because for many theatres, the panto season makes up around 30% of their yearly income. Now, panto season is here, and theatres are desperately hoping to make up for that dismal year they had in 2020. But already, some venues have cancelled their shows this year, and there are growing fears that the rapid spread of the Omicron variant could spell disaster for local theatres once more. From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, can theatres survive another winter of COVID cancellations? Harriet Sherwood, you're the arts and culture correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer. Can we start with you explaining where pantos fit in with Britain's Christmas traditions?
Well, it's an absolutely essential part of Christmas. I mean, along with carol services, mince pies and the Queen's speech. And often it's a multi-generational experience with whole families going along, grandparents, their children and their grandchildren.
Now, where is Peter Pan?
But in fact, the panto tradition dates back to the 16th century, so it's been around for a very long time. Although it didn't really get big until the Victorian era, when we started to see huge casts and live animals on stage and special effects and pantos lasting up to 5 hours sometimes. But modern pantos are kind of all those things, but also highly interactive. You have lots of real-world gags that appeal to adults.
I think it's a good idea, like, to start a show like this with one big long hiss. And then you don't need another big long hiss till the interval, right?
There's like a nod and a wink, yeah. isn't there? The whole way through, it's all about fun.
This is Davina DeCampo. She's playing Carabosse, the evil fairy in Corby's production of Sleeping Beauty.
So it's not like, you know, we're not doing Dostoevsky or anything like that.
I am.
I mean, well, all right, you enjoy that and we'll carry on with the show. so it's about having, you know, a laugh and making it accessible. That's the thing about pantomime, is that it's accessible for everybody, whether you're 100 or whether you're one.
And the other tradition that's very interesting is that it was pretty risque in the Victorian era. That's when we started seeing gender switching, with the principal boy being played by a woman and the pantomime dame being played by a man.
It's one of those places where it's always been messed around with. You know, the dame is usually played by a man. And that can, now we're seeing more full-time drag performers being included as dames or as the principal boy, you know, which wasn't necessarily what was happening before. They were kind of what you would describe as straight actors.
I was in the wings waiting to come on and I was chatted up by one of the dancers, Mum.
You were being chatted up?
Yeah. You.
Me.
You.
Me.
One of the things that this show highlights is the popularity of drag.
That's Don Juan, who is playing Prince Eric.
So we can't deny that, you know, drag race has grown and grown, especially in the UK. And drag as a whole has just become bigger than it's ever been. And so for this show to be cast as a predominantly drag-focused show just shows that that's what audience want to see.
Just one, two, three, boo. Hissing.
Could you, panto performances obviously rely on rowdy audience, heckling, cackling and so on in a way that you don't have in traditional theatre. You have to get them involved to make them work. How do you get the audience on board? What are your tricks?
There are lines. Panto is full of invitations for them to join in.
Lola Lasagna, who's playing Nanny Lola, is an old hand at playing the panto dame.
It's behind you. Oh, yes, it is. And oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Booing every time Carabosse comes to the stage.
Is that the best boo you can do?
Cheering every time the dashing Prince Eric comes on stage, laughing hysterically at my brilliant wit and my beautiful singing as well. Not laughing at my singing, but you know what I mean. Anyway, yeah, I messed that one up, didn't I? Anyhow, but we invite them to do it, yeah. and that's the best bit. That you don't. There's no need for them to think, oh, I can just join in. They can, but there are places for them to do it. And panto, it's a beautiful formula. It's a beautiful formula. It hasn't changed over hundreds of years, and it won't change.
As a performer, what do you most enjoy about pantomime? And conversely, what's the worst bit?
For me, I've been very lucky to play. I'm playing the dame this year. I'm playing Nanny Lola. So the dame is there to warm to everybody and for them to warm to them. But then also I have played Ugly Sister on several occasions and being booed at by a whole theatre of people. There is nothing better in the world. If you can do your job right and get everyone against you, as well as get everybody for you as well, in whichever part you play, then you've done your job right. And it's the most satisfying thing. And the first time I ever did panto, when we did Oh Yes It Is, Oh No It Isn't, I had tears in my eyes because I was so happy to be doing that at last.
The worst thing I think for me about panto is corpsing on stage, because I just can't stop myself. If somebody does something,
what corpsing is.
So if you corpse, you're laughing on stage, and I just can't stop myself. And then
thing is, yeah. See, that's the laugh. That's the laugh, and so we really don't want that to happen. Yeah, very often.
Yeah, that could be the worst thing about panto, Davina's laugh.
Harriet, we've just heard from a very giddy cast, excited at the prospect of performing again. But last year, we saw pantos cancelled across the country and it had a huge effect on the industry. Can you explain why?
Yes, it was a disaster. I mean, last year, quite a lot of pantos, most pantos, in fact, were cancelled before they even opened. But a few did kick off, did start, and then had to close. And that was terrible for the whole industry.
The entire shutdown of arts venues and live events during the COVID-19 crisis could mean 400,000 job losses.
Because Panto is an enormous industry. It not only provides work for actors and minor celebrities, but also there are all the people that you don't see on the stage, the backstage crews, the lighting crews, the costume makers, which of course is a huge part, the makeup artists, the front of house. There's an enormous number of people involved in any theatrical production, and that was really, really bad for them.
Usually at this time of year, theatres would be getting ready to be packed with little kids and big kids alike, all ready for a night of magic and mayhem at the pantomime. But sadly, all that's behind me this year is an auditorium of empty seats.
And for most theatres around the country, Panto brings in a huge proportion of the annual ticket revenue, up to 40% in some cases in a run that may only last 4 or 5 weeks. And that income allows those theatres to subsidise, basically, productions at other times of the year that might not be quite so popular.
Don Juan, what has it meant for you as a performer? How important is it for you to be back on stage?
I think being back on stage after last year, so working all the way through December compared to December 2020, feels like a real luxury. But it's also just being back on stage. That's what I enjoy most as a performer, being in front of an audience. So that in itself is just a really exciting opportunity.
So Harriet, how did theatres respond to COVID restrictions last year?
Well, a lot of them had to simply write off their Christmas season, which was a huge financial blow. But quite a lot went digital.
People are saying that Pantos are cancelled.
Oh, no, they're not.
So what we'd seen by then, by Christmas last year, we'd already had 9 months of the pandemic. All theatres closed at the start of the pandemic, and a lot had adapted to live streaming, online performances. It was a disaster last year. The Panto season was a complete wipeout, but there was some online performances.
You don't have to come and see us this year. We're going to come to you, every single one of you.
So the government did eventually provide a £1.6 billion relief package to arts and culture. How did that play out? Who were the winners? Who were the losers? And what did the relief look like?
There's been a series of packages, but the first one that was announced in July last year, so after a few months of the pandemic, was £1.6 billion. And it did go to regional theatres as well. It wasn't just aimed at the big flagship West End theatres, but it was very much focused on companies. And so many people who work in the theatre industry are freelance. So they didn't directly benefit from that package, although obviously they indirectly benefited from the help that was given to the sector as a whole. And lots of those people during the course of the last 20 months or 21 months, they've found it really hard. They just can't go on with this struggle anymore. And I've heard anecdotal evidence in the past few weeks that theatres are struggling to find the crews to put on Pantos because lots of people have simply gone off and found different jobs and different careers.
Well, this sounds like big alarm bells for the theatre industry. And in general, how worried do you think everyone should be looking ahead? And how have theatres survived in general during the pandemic? Have we seen many closures?
We've seen a few. There have been closures in small towns, but I just think that the longer COVID restrictions go on, the more difficult it is inevitably. You know, theatres are massively important, not just for what they put on stage, but their regional theatres and local theatres are really important in their local communities. They have a big knock-on effect to other parts of the entertainment sector. So if you're going to the theatre, you'll probably go and have something to eat or have a drink. So that brings in money to restaurants and bars. Nearly all local theatres do incredible community work.
For The Core in Corby, Jo Flavin says that community work is an essential part of what they do.
as well as doing shows on the stage, we also do a lot of community engagement work and have quite a comprehensive creative learning program. Particularly in Corby, I suppose, you know, there is maybe a little bit of an antisocial behaviour kind of issue. We're very keen to kind of work on that. We're setting up a youth music program funded by youth music to, you know, I suppose, use kind of music as a way to kind of get young people kind of, I suppose, off the streets, but doing something more productive and, you know, more positive than what they could be doing without us, sort of thing.
So I think that if we lose theatres, whether they're big institutions or whether they're your local theatre in your local town, it will be a tremendous loss that will be felt throughout communities everywhere.
And of course, the Omicron variant is causing havoc, with cases estimated at up to 200,000 a day now. The government has already introduced new measures, as well as guidance to limit social mixing. As we speak, some venues have already cancelled their pantos, and in others, ticket sales aren't what they'd expect in a normal year. So far in this wave, the government has not offered any financial support to the entertainment industry. So, Harriet, if further restrictions do come in, or venues feel they simply can't go ahead with their shows, can British theatre survive another season without Christmas shows?
I think it would be really difficult to survive. I think under Plan B, we're seeing masks mandatory in theatres now, which is will put some people off. I think there's quite a lot of anxiety and nervousness. So I think that if we see cancellations and if we see reduced audiences, that is going to have a very big impact on the plans that theatres are making for 2022. And another closure, as we have seen in the past, a closure order on theatres would be terrible, have very, very big ripple effect. I think that some regional theatres would just, it would tip them over the edge. They wouldn't be able to survive.
We can't go on like this. Theatre is now on its knees. There's no way forward.
And even Andrew Lloyd Webber, who runs some of the London's West End theatres, has said recently that if there's another closure, some of his theatres will have to close permanently. And if Andrew Lloyd Webber is saying that, then a lot of regional theatres which do struggle financially are going to be in a much worse position.
Coming up, can the Corps make it to opening night? As we record this, the government is clearly taking this day by day with a real chance that major new restrictions could be necessary quite quickly. Will Brenton, as the director of Sleeping Beauty, are you worried?
I think everybody's worried. Everybody's concerned. Personally, I hope they don't make any knee-jerk decisions. I hope they base it on the data, and I hope they value what theatre actually brings. I think there's been a lot of discussion over the last 2 years about, well, why can hospitality groups open but theatres can't open? Why can we go into a bar and why can't we sit in a theatre? And I hope they take that decision very seriously.
And Joe, how worried are you?
I think, like I've said, resilience is kind of something that the industry has learned to just kind of build into their plans now. We have to be ready to kind of change plans literally on a day. We've kind of been through all that before, so we have the systems in place now. Where we didn't before the pandemic, we obviously do now. If we need to change very quickly and change our plans, we kind of are ready for that because we've kind of already been through all this before.
What do you hope opening night will look like for Sleeping Beauty?
I hope to see a lot of people coming to our doors who are up for a good night and who leave with a big smile on their face.
Lots of excitement, lots of nerves, and people standing on their feet at the end of the show. Not to leave, to watch the show.
Knowing that we're part of something that is allowing people to come out, come to a theatre, and, you know, enjoy life again. Being part of that is just the best feeling in the world.
Nine Christmas crackers.
Eight Repeater
Budgies.
Seven
Cuddly
Toys.
Six Rubber Chickens.
Five Toilet Rolls.
That was Lola Lasagna, Davina DeCampo, Don Juan, Joe Flavin, Will Brenton, and The Guardian's Harriet Sherwood. My thanks to all of them. All being well, Sleeping Beauty will run at the Core in Corby from tonight, December the 17th, until Friday the 31st. And in the spirit of Christmas, you can also donate to our Christmas charity appeal, which this year is focused on climate justice and helping those who have had their lives, homes and whole communities devastated by the climate crisis. Donate today at theguardian.com/charity2021. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alex Atak and Georgina Quach. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Mithy Rao. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.